Hey, everybody, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. My guest today is Casey Jordan. She is a business strategist, troubleshooting small business struggles and supporting startups. After surviving a roadside bombing in Iraq, which we will get into at some point, and years later, tackling multiple rounds of infertility treatments with no good outcomes, which we will also get into, Casey has come to deeply believe that change is inevitable, but evolution is optional. We get to create our best lives and a business that suits our lives. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to start with this. Let's talk about, you've been through a lot, okay?
Yes.
So we'll start with what happened in Iraq and tell us the story. What happened?
So I deployed with the Montana Army National Guard. I enlisted actually right before my senior year of high school, and which was right before the 9/11 terrorist attacks. So like for people who are old enough to remember what that political shift was, I enlisted before all of that. Right after I graduated high school, I went to my military schools, and pretty much immediately after coming home from those schools, my unit got deployed. So I was with the Montana National Guard, military police, and we were deployed into Baghdad. We were helping to rebuild the Baghdad Police Department. This was 2003 to 2004, so right after the initial invasion.
Okay.
And coming up on the end of our tour, April 13th, 2004, we were coming home from our missions at the end of the day, and we got hit. I worked as a turret gunner, so on a Humvee, so the person sticking out the top of the truck, and we got hit with a roadside bomb. I got slammed around. I separated my shoulder. I have nerve damage through my shoulder, elbow, and wrist. And then years later, I was diagnosed with brain injury and post-traumatic stress.
Wow. Well, first of all, let me say thank you for your service to our country. It is extremely important to me to recognize the people that help keep us free. And this is the land of the free because of the brave. Mm-hmm. And thank you for doing that. And second, to say that, you know, my heart goes out to you from the understanding that not only did you put yourself out there to say, I'm willing to take a risk in order to keep our country free, but there's a price that went with that. Mm-hmm. And so you're experiencing that. Listen, I have a good friend of mine, his name's Doug Vitale, and he actually stepped on an IED in Afghanistan and lost both legs and had a severe brain injury. Mm-hmm. But, you know, his wife has stuck with him, and he's still one of the, you know, he inspires me. So that's a really cool thing, and I want to say thank you for that. So are you originally from Montana then?
Yes, born and raised. I just moved to Virginia in May of this year. I haven't even been here 6 months yet.
Okay. So whereabouts in Montana, just for morbid curiosity?
I was born in Bozeman, which is one of the big tourist hotspots you hear of. The last 10 years I was there, I was in Billings on the east side of the state.
Okay. My brother-in-law and his wife and their kids live out near Great Falls.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, small world. Anytime anyone says Montana, I'm like, ooh.
Yep.
And then when you say Virginia, how are you finding the difference between Montana and Virginia?
It's a big difference. Culturally, socially, humidity, it's been a big change. But that's why we came, was the sense of adventure and something different. So it's been perfect for what we were looking for.
Awesome. So you get home from Iraq, and at some point in time, I'm assuming you get married and you're thinking about having kids. What is that process like for you? How does that experience go?
Well, that went really poorly for us as well. I met my husband about 5 years after I got home from Iraq. You know, kind of the typical, dated for a few years, got married kind of a year after we got married, started trying for kids, didn't work. Turned out we have health issues on both sides, and when you match them together, we had to go through IVF to get pregnant, and we did 5 rounds of IVF. I got pregnant 4 times, but I miscarried all 4 of them before 9 weeks. And so after IVF is not cheap, between the financial toll, the emotional toll, the physical toll on my body, because IVF, you're doing a lot of hormone injections. You know, I was doing 3 to 5 shots. At one point I was on 16 different medications, 12 of which were hormones.
Wow.
And we did all that in about a 2-year window. And as we kind of got to that last couple rounds, we started talking about so what's next? Do we adopt? Do we just not have kids? Do we do more IVF? And I, both of us, for a variety of reasons, didn't want to pursue the adoption route.
Okay.
It was very important for us that we had that experience of the pregnancy and all that kind of stuff. So we decided to move on with life without kids. So I refer to myself as child-free, not by choice. I have learned to embrace not having kids, especially the timing of our last pregnancy, which was actually twins. If I hadn't lost that pregnancy, I would have 2-year-olds, twins in the middle of this pandemic. And I can see the side of that where I'm really thankful for being where I'm at and still grieving all that we went through. But then, so when we made the decision to stop when the last pregnancy failed, that was it. We closed the door on that chapter and kind of took some time to recover. And that's what led to my husband taking a job opportunity here in Virginia. Was we bought our 6-bedroom forever home in Montana to raise our kids.
Sure.
And when that was taken out of the picture, we were like, okay, well, we want something to shake up our lives. You know, I'm 36, he's 40. We were kind of counting on kids for that next adventure, shake up, new challenges. And so we said, well, the hell with it. The 2 Montana kids who everybody expected to stay in Montana their entire life are going to pack their bags and move to Virginia.
Wow. So I don't think I shared this with you, but part of what appealed to me in looking at your bio for the show was that experience. Mm-hmm. Because my wife and I went through similar experience. You know, I've got a disability, and so, which means that it's all my fault that we were having trouble having kids. And that's a very heavy burden to bear. And I'm sure that you feel something similar in terms of the difficulty of we're going through this and there's something about my body that it's not working like it's supposed to. First of all, I appreciate your openness and your vulnerability in sharing that with us. But I will say we did 2 rounds, and let me back up to say this. The process of having kids is supposed to be fun,
right?
It's supposed to be the ultimate expression of the closeness between a husband and wife.
Yep.
And at some point it becomes more like a science experiment, and it becomes more, it's about temperature and date and time and just, and so we ended up doing in vitro. We did it twice, and we were successful in our second attempt. And I remember I got the call that said, we're expecting. And then she went for her first sonogram, and there was twins. And she went for her next sonogram, and they picked up a third heartbeat. And so I am the proud father of 18-year-old triplets.
Wow.
So let me just say, I want to say this in a way that it doesn't come across all wrong. I would not trade my kids for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when it comes to having triplets, do I ever wish that, we didn't have triplets in the end? No. Which one of them would I say, okay, you're the one that I would send back.
Right.
Right? No, they're all unique and beautiful in their own way. However, at the same time, like you said, triplets are a lot. It's a lot to handle. And when they're little, their problems are all little. And now that they're 18, their problems have grown, exponentially along with the size. So,
that's the thing I always want to convey to people. And I still have friends who are in the infertility world who are still making their decisions and doing treatment. Is to me, it was never a decision of which life path is right or wrong, better or worse. Like our society, especially for women, there's so much pressure that like motherhood is the epitome of womanhood, and of like being a successful woman in of the American society. But I don't see it that way. Like there are pros and cons on both sides. Yeah, I don't get to watch my kids have their first steps or graduate high school or those things, but I also don't have to deal with not sleeping for 2 years and diapers and sending kids off to college. And, you know, I look at what's going on in the world today and having teenagers that, you know, you would be about to release into this world, like at some level has to be terrifying. And
completely.
So it's not a better or worse. It's just two very different paths. And I'm going to look for the bright spots in the path I got put on.
And I think that's really where we need to go next. And that is, you've been through these tough times. You've survived a roadside bomb. You've gone through the absolute misery of infertility treatments and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the, in some ways, bitter disappointment of it not working.
Yep.
And yet what you just said is you're looking to find the bright spots in this. How do you do that?
A lot of years of therapy. I mean, for a lot of years, I didn't cope. When I met my husband, I mean, he can attest to how much I've changed in the 11 years we've been together. I used to really struggle, and it really was kind of a conscious decision that like, I can't change the fact that I got blown up. I can't change, I used to have a near photographic memory, but with the brain injury, I can barely remember what I ate for breakfast now. And I will never change that, and that'll never come back. So instead of fighting it, how do I live with it? And once I learned to live with it, then it was like, okay, how do I embrace it? And while I would have dealt with the PTSD, I started doing a lot of public speaking and talking very openly about PTSD and brain injury and being a female veteran. And I realized how healing sharing my story was for me. Like right. You think about it when you're a speaker, it's for the audience. I'm like, no, I talk for me. And so as we went through the fertility stuff, like I really called back on those lessons.
Sure. But you know, it's funny because I talk about that, you know, I'm a Christian and I'm very involved in church. And sometimes at church, you have two kinds of messages. One is a message that's for the benefit of the audience in which you're trying to teach people something. And one is a message that's for the benefit of the speaker, where at the end of the time they're like, yeah, see, I told them and I fixed them. And what you're talking about is not that type of message at all. It's a message in which you are sharing and you are open and you are vulnerable. And in doing that, it really allows you to do some healing. On your own. And yet I would imagine that openness and vulnerability is also something that really resonates with your audience.
Absolutely. I think the other thing that I have found, not only in like, there's that sharing my story helps heal me, but also I have yet to get off stage or do a podcast interview where somebody in the audience didn't relate to my story. I did a TEDx talk about life after war. And when I got off stage, it still chokes me up. I had a wife of a Vietnam veteran who came over and thanked me for sharing so she could better understand what her husband was living with all these decades later.
Wow.
And I had other young veterans come to me and say, thank you, I'm not crazy. Sharing about infertility, like we hadn't discussed that prior to this. And yet there's another person, like, especially infertility, because we don't talk about it. And yet one in four couples faces some level of infertility. And so the more I can talk about it and validate it, I find out I'm not alone. And I also help somebody else find out they're not alone.
Yeah. In some ways, your timing in moving to Richmond could not be either better or worse. I have an aunt and an uncle who live on the south side of Richmond, and they are the most amazing couple. They have a fantastic way with kids, but they never had kids.
Mm-hmm.
And watching them, while they never had kids of their own, they have invested their lives into improving the life of the kids around them.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, that, again, on a random side note here, I actually started the concept a couple years ago of renaming Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to rename it not Father's Day, but Dad's Day. And the reason is this, that you don't have to be somebody's father in order to be a positive impact, to make a positive impact in their life, to fill that dad role. Fatherhood is a contribution of genetic material. A dad is someone who invests in a kid's life. And that's
right. Absolutely.
You know, that's really what you talk about, just because we're in a position where, you know, we were able to have kids. You may not, but there are ways that you can now take the energy that would have been devoted to kids and invest that in making the world a better place.
Yep, exactly. And like you said, there's a million ways to parent if that's what we choose, you know, of engaging with the community around us. We have 11 nieces and nephews, so they keep us pretty busy because most of them are under the age of like 8 still.
Wow.
So yeah, we've got, there's still all those opportunities to engage wherever. And also, like, I mean, for a while, it's also totally okay. I stepped away, like, for a couple of years, couldn't be around other people's kids. I couldn't be around, especially babies and pregnant women. And I got a puppy and I blasted the internet with pictures of my puppy. And like, she is my dog. I mean, we have 2 dogs, but the puppy is like my baby girl. And
right.
I do it that way. And that's okay too.
You got to do what works for you. You know,
yep.
One of the things that you had shared kind of in your intro is that change is inevitable, but evolution is optional. I love that concept. Tell me more about that and how you kind of came up with it and how you see it applying to life in general.
I was working actually on some messaging for my business. I had a messaging coach that I was working with, and we kept having this conversation around change. And like, the fact is, change happens to all of us. Like, whatever it is in your life, there has been some sort of tragedy or trauma or plans gone awry. And I watch so many people, and I see this, like, I think a lot of it came from the veterans community. I watch so many veterans just get drug along by their diagnosis. And it's kind of this, I have PTSD, oh, ho, hum. Like, and not to like downplay that. I mean, it's still a very major thing, but like, change happens. What we choose to do with that change, I don't think anybody in the world, if I completely shut down and gave up on life, I don't think anybody would begrudge me that. Like, I got blown up, I had 4 miscarriages. Like, I've had enough thrown at me.
Sure.
That I don't think anybody would question me giving up. But why? Like, okay, I survived getting blown up. I survived all that trauma of infertility. What's next? And so that's where the evolution to me, evolution is this kind of this process that you have to force. So instead of letting change just drag me along, I'm going to lean into my next evolution, and I'm going to see where this change will propel me instead of where it'll hold me back.
It's interesting because, you know, the theory of evolution as it is now talks about the environment shaping who survives and who doesn't survive. Your concept of evolution sounds very different because it's not being transformed by your surroundings, but it's about something that is changing and developing on the inside. Am I understanding your perspective properly?
Absolutely. Yeah. So like, the environment creates the change and we have to adapt to that change. And so, yeah, it's a very internal and sometimes a lot of times a very conscious decision to make that evolution. For us, the decision of keep trying IVF, adopt, or cut bait and move across the country. Like, those are all very big decisions. And, you know, each of them brings with it its own next level of development and growth and opportunity.
Yeah. It's so true. So you're taking everything that's come to you and you're kind of turning this into a good thing. And you've worked this into like a framework. And I was very curious about this. Tell me about it. You have like certain steps of this framework that you've developed. Can you tell me about how many steps there are and like walk me through what you're talking about?
Yeah. So this actually developed out of a keynote talk about dealing with adversity and overcoming. And I realized I have basically a 7-part framework, and they're not so much steps as in one after the next, but just kind of, and I realized I use steps a lot. I've been trying to change my language to 7 parts. But basically, when I was asked to name the keynote, all I could come up with was the 7 life lessons I learned from being blown up. And it kind of stuck. And so these lessons are owning your story, remembering that there's no right way to do anything in life. Baby steps, no matter how hard it is, keep taking itty bitty, teeny tiny baby steps forward, because it's still forward. Face it, and then face it again, and then face it again. Number five is finding your spark, which to me is a little different than, like, we talk in business a lot about knowing your why. To me, like, that's a bigger, deeper thing. Your spark is what lights you up. What topic do you just love to talk about? And then what was that, five?
Yep.
Six is balancing your strengths and weaknesses. So I don't think weakness is a thing we need to stop in ourselves or correct. We just need to balance it. I have the memory of a goldfish, so I have sticky notes all over my office. I actually have the seven steps on a bulletin board behind my desk, because sometimes I forget them and they're my seven steps. So it's like, I'm not going to try to fix it. I just find tools to work around it. And then I know what my strengths are, and I really bring those traits into my business. And then the seventh part is to never stop learning and growing.
I love it. I am so in, you know, agreement with what you're talking about. And, you know, from just the concepts that you're laying out there, that, you know, baby steps, always moving forward, mm-hmm. and always learn, and as well, balancing strengths and weaknesses. Because listen, you know, as somebody who faces a lot of physical limitations, I've had to learn, okay, there are three types of limitations out there. There are the things that I can't change and I have to accept. There are the things that I can change easily and just have to put in some work to do to make those changes. And maybe easily is not the right word, but there are things that I can change with some effort. And then there are things kind of in the middle, mm-hmm. that are possible to change, but it would take a tremendous amount of effort. And the question becomes, really, how do I sort it into the, it's too much effort to change it, or it's so important that I'll put in whatever effort I need to make that change? Mm-hmm. Does that?
I love that approach. Yeah, I've never thought of it like that. I've always thought about, you can change it or you can't, but there is that middle ground. And like, what pops to my mind is like the baby steps. One of the examples I give a lot when I talk, when I first got home from Iraq and my PTSD really was at its worst, I didn't get out of bed for days on end. And so my first baby step literally was, if I get out of bed, take a shower, put on the same dirty pajamas and get back into bed, it was a successful day. And once I got to where I could do that pretty continuously, then it was like, okay, I'm gonna shower, I'm gonna put on jeans, and then I can get back into bed. And then it was shower, jeans, drive to the grocery store and come home. Because like, I went to Walmart in the middle of the night because I had so much anxiety about being around people.
Sure.
And so like, I think that one is kind of one of those like hard to change, almost like, is it worth doing the change? But if you break the step down small enough and you care enough about the end result, you'll find the step that you need to take to start you moving forward.
Yeah, that it is. I've written three books, and when I sign them, one of the things that I sign them is just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
That you never actually are in a place where you are sitting still. You are either moving forward or moving backward.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not even that you are moving backwards, but life is moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So by sitting still, you are in effect moving backwards because life around you is moving forward.
Yeah, that's that change is inevitable. Or my mom, a very poignant moment in my teenage years, she said, by not making a decision, you're making a decision.
Yeah, very true. So as a speaker, who do you talk to?
A mixture of high school and university psychology classes. My master's degree is in mental health, and I actually used to be a therapist, so I can talk about PTSD both clinically and as a patient. So it's a very fun dynamic to teach. And then pretty much any audience that'll have me. I've done workshops with law enforcement to kind of educate them on, approaching somebody who might be dealing with a PTSD situation. I've talked just inspirational audiences, pretty much anybody who'll put me in front of them. I love to talk to them.
Fantastic. And I wish you, as a fellow speaker, I wish you the absolute best of luck with that. So if folks are looking to get a hold of you, where can they find you?
Easiest place is my website, which is caseyjordan.com. Jordan is spelled J-O-U-R-D-A-N because nothing is easy in my life. I'm on Instagram all the time, casey.jordan. Yeah.
All right. I will happily put all of that information into the show notes. You were also generous enough to make an offer for my listeners. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
Yes. So one of the big things for me as a function of the brain injury is really... And what I do in my business is creating systems and strategies, really breaking things down to those baby steps. So I have a project planner like workbook. So if you've got a big, whether it's writing a book, starting a business, remodeling your house, whatever kind of project that you haven't started because it's so overwhelming, you can go to caseyjordan.com/project planner. And there's a downloadable workbook there that will break it down in a new and different way and get you taking action on that project.
I love it. I'm assuming that as you break that down, the analogy still holds. Like, how do you eat a whale?
Yep.
You eat it one bite at a time, right?
Yep.
Fantastic. Casey, you have indeed showed that you are smart. I have learned a tremendous amount from you. I really appreciate you being on the show, like on so many levels. I appreciate the service to our country. I appreciate the camaraderie of going through the difficult experience of infertility treatments. I appreciate your openness, that what you've offered to my audience, it's been phenomenal. Now it is, though, my favorite part of the show. It's a chance to show who you are as a person. It's three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready for these?
All right, let's do it.
What is the most unusual thing you have ever eaten?
I'll probably have to tell the story, but a chicken and peanut butter sandwich.
Okay. If there's a story, it'll help me understand.
Yeah. So my roommate, her brother was a Marine and he was home on leave and staying with us. And we had had chicken for dinner, like just a grocery store rotisserie chicken. And she had gone to the bathroom. While she was in the bathroom, I ate a Reese's peanut butter cup. And she came back out and she's like, who is eating peanut butter? And we both kind of like, both being a military type and like practical jokesters, like her brother and I both kind of were like, oh, we were having peanut butter on our chicken. She's like, what? We're like, is it a military thing? I don't know. It's a Southern thing. Like, yeah, haven't you ever had chicken with peanut butter on it? And we got her so convinced and so riled up that she ate a big chunk of chicken with peanut butter on it. And which actually, like, then to play fair, I was like, okay, I'll take a bite. And it really isn't terrible. It actually does work pretty well.
Okay. I will trust you. This is one of those things, though, where when I say I trust you, I don't mean I trust you enough to do it myself. I just take your word for it.
Yep.
So if you were going to be stuck on a deserted island and could only take three things with you, what are the three things you would take?
Gosh. Can I cheat and say my iPad? Because then I have music, I have a place to write, I have a place to draw.
Yeah, that, you know what? The iPad, I may count as all three. So that's, yeah, take your iPad.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's one that's got like the Wi-Fi or the cellular connectivity, and you can get some kind of signal out there on your deserted island.
Yep. Yeah, I've got to constantly be creative. So writing, drawing, yep.
All right, last one. And that is, have you ever had front row seats to a play or a concert or anything like that?
Yes. I actually, not only front row seats, but I got to be a personal bodyguard for Kid Rock for a day. They brought him out to Baghdad for a USO show, and the sergeant major that booked the show didn't know who Kid Rock was and that it would be a big deal.
Wow.
And so he had not booked enough security for the venue.
Okay.
And so as military police wearing our armed brassards, he was like, hey, every MP that has a brassard on, like, you're on duty now. And so we got to like hang out front row. It was Kid Rock, his whole band, Jesse James, who's a famous motorcycle guy.
Right.
Like all of these big names, a bunch of celebrities, NBA basketball stars. And we got to like hang out with them for the day.
Very, very cool story. Listen, Casey, thank you so much for being on the show. All of your contact information is going to be down in the show notes. And again, thank you for your openness and for sharing. This has been fantastic. For all of you that are listening, I say thank you for listening. I hope that you have learned something today. Please subscribe to the show. Send us an email. Let us know what you think. Follow us on social media. And I will remind you, as always, when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.